welcome to the Coaching and Therapy channel. So this channel is quite close to my heart because I train coaches in embodiment. I mean, why? Because if you don't work with the body, you're missing a lot, whether you're a coach, a therapist, facilitator, whatever. That's how you go deep quickly. That's how you do stuff that's sticky. We have to take the body into account. This channel is sponsored by Dylan Newcombe and Uzazu Embodied Intelligence. Dylan is a genius, quite simply put, and I wouldn't say that about many people in this field. I've been studying with Dylan for, God, the first time was probably 10 years ago in the Netherlands. Speaks fluent Dutch, by the way, as well as Korean and a few other languages. What I love about Dylan is his ability to make models of things, looking at how embodiment works. His system, Uzazu, U-Z-A-Z-U, is really all about state shifting. So I think of him as the sort of master of state changing, how we can shift our state, our client's state, and how we can develop ourselves through those different ways of being. So I think for coaches and therapists, it's like easy to learn, practical toolkit. I've used it myself over the years. So if you want a 3-day online training with Dylan, then look at the link below, or you can go to Uzazu, uzazu.org. And even easier, he's got an embodied assessment there you can do as well. We all love doing these little tests about ourselves, but this is an embodied one. So there you go. Welcome to the Coaching and Therapy channel. I'm going to be on this one a lot just because there's lots of cool people on here. Lots of people, I think, you know, well worth a listen. Embodiment in facilitation is so necessary. So from me to you, welcome.
Hello, everyone. Whether it is morning, afternoon, or evening, wherever you are, welcome to this embodiment talk about harnessing the spotlight. And I'm in one right now. So let me get on with it. I'd like to talk about mornings. There are only two types of mornings. And the first one is, every day I open two gifts, my eyes, and every day I'm working my own sunshine. I'm stretching warrior poses. Oh yes, I am gonna kiss that affirmation board. I am gonna rock the vision board and the affirmations all day long, and bring me that mountain, because this woman has got steel cleats. Devil, you may tremble, because trouble just got up. And the second one is, you have got to be kidding. It can't be morning. I don't want it to be morning. Can I have chocolate for breakfast? But that's when they get a whiff of your self-loathing, the mind goblins. And this is not a drill. They come scrambling over and they lean in and they say, you're useless. In fact, you've always been useless. That's their favorite game. Okay, for anybody who doesn't know what a mind goblin is, it's this sort of flatulent creature that lives in the back of your mind, and it's buried under all of your forgotten dreams. It's got your favourite one, and it's nestled in there, making it its bed. Oh, this is their favourite game. They will push anything out there that they think is fun. They love procrastination. That one you can have. Then they've got comparisonitis, that'll steal your joy. And then there's, perfectionism. And then there's, their favorite, imposter syndrome. Yes, you can have that one. And if they can't think of anything, they'll hand out overwhelm. You can have overwhelm, and you can have overwhelm. Everyone can have overwhelm. Yes. They are quite a formidable foe. And most of us don't have very many weapons to use against them. I mean, my favorite is a Pinterest board full of memes just for this occasion. I'll take down a grade A meme. Oh yes, this one will do. Be stronger than your excuses. And like most of you, I post that on Facebook and Instagram, and I'll put it on Snapchat, and I don't even have the app. And then I'll put it in that WhatsApp group where everybody will then go, hashtag you go girl. Oh, that's just delicious. I'll even throw it out on TikTok and then LinkedIn. Oh, not LinkedIn. No, no. Delete, delete, delete. Whew. Now, if you think about the power of that, and it's just a story in your head, imagine the power of your story. All you have to do is awaken the legend within. So, carrot comparisonitis is one of the favorites. Now, the spotlight is another mind goblin's favorite playground. Oh yes, they will come up with all sorts of things. Now, pop it in the chat, which one is you? But under the spotlight, we usually run off at the mouth, or we believe any mistake we make is amplified, or we forget what we need to say, or much, much worse, we feel inferior to the audience. Now, whether that is because there's this innate response to the predator stare, you know, that fight or flight response, or something just as simple as the observer effect. The mere observation of something inevitably changes something. Doesn't actually matter, because we're going to have some fun now. What I want you to do is find a piece of paper and a pen, and I want you to draw your mind goblin. I'm going to give you a minute to do that. Now, here are some ideas. And if you think, yes, but I can't draw, that's just another mind goblin. This isn't a pass or fail class. This is just for fun. So what mind goblin do you have? And we're going to draw them for 2 minutes. Perfect. Perfect, Siwan. I am delighted. I'd love you to unmute and tell us your mind goblin story. I love this bit.
Hello.
Hi.
This is my mind goblin. It looks way, way too kind and nice for how it is, really. I couldn't make a really nasty face. Couldn't work out how to do it.
Well, you see, the funny thing is, a mind goblin is really just trying to protect us, aren't they? So it doesn't surprise me, because their job is really to keep us safe. The fact that it keeps us small just is the problem. So I'm not surprised that actually it's quite nice, because this is a head game, really, isn't it? And let's face it, we're at the embodiment conference, and mind goblins are all in the head. And we all know that even at an epigenetic level, at a cellular level, we cannot be in protection or growth at the same time. So we have to choose between one or the other. And our lovely little mind goblins are really just trying to protect us. Everything we do has a positive purpose for us, even if it's not good for us. This is Bruce Lipton, and he wrote about this in The Biology of Belief, just if you want to go to the science about it. So the question now that we have to ask, so with your, by the way, if you've got mind goblins on pieces of paper or whatever, what you need to do is just stroke them a little bit and say, there, there, thank you so much. And then just put him to the side, put them to the side, and then Anytime they crop up, you know what to do now, because you know what they look like and you know they're really quite cute. And you just make them smaller and pop them to the side somewhere and go there, there. And then, whew, let's move past them. So the question is, why is it that some people can walk onto a stage or screen and instantly, seemingly effortlessly command attention? So whether the spotlight is the eye of Sauron for you, or whether it is the ability to harness all the energy of the universe under your message so that it can scale to the lives of everyone who hears it comes down to one thing. You'll be glad to know you already have it. It comes down to embodiment, because we have to come out of the head space and we come into here. And how do we do that? Well, the spotlight is a very interesting power. It's probably one of the most powerful things the human being has invented, but all a spotlight does is transmit exactly what it sees. It is dispassionate. It is unemotional. It just looks at you, takes what it sees, and transmits that. And so, who you are inside your story is the real thing. And that's what the spotlight will transmit. Now, I realize that you may not believe me. So let me introduce myself. I'm Melanie Gao. This is my Tinder profile photograph. I took one of those courses online that said how to look 10 years younger, and apparently nobody can resist a smile. Don't worry, I actually don't have a Tinder profile. I'm just being funny. So in some worlds, I'm known as a story strategist and a TEDx coach. That's somebody who teaches people to present on stage. But in my world, I believe I make legends. One of the concepts that I work with is story, and the legend story is very powerful. The word legend comes from the Latin legenda, things which ought to be read. It demonstrates human values. It possesses certain qualities that are true, includes nothing that is impossible, but may embrace miracles. And to me, that's most of us. I am a speaker. I'm a film director. I'm an author. I'm a process founder. But what I am most proud of is the people that I've put on stage. And I put people on stages, not speakers. People just like you and me. It's a wonderful job. So let's get down to it. What is the strange magnetism that makes some people so compelling? And is it something we can learn? Obviously, I think it is. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here trying to teach this. So the number one truth about embodying or embracing the spotlight is that all speaking is public, whether it's to 1,000 or one person. And particularly now, when all the stages around the world have closed, a new one has opened up, this one of the lens. For you and I, it feels like a conference call. Maybe it feels like a FaceTime, but it's actually incredibly similar to a movie camera. And therefore, it is probably one of the most powerful stages in the world. And it is available to us all around the world. So it's really worth mastering this. So I work with true stories, despite the fact I've worked with all sorts. But so I'm here to tell you that story literacy isn't an optional extra for the few. It's a core skill for the 21st century. And you don't have to believe me. That is Chris Anderson, head of TED. But right back in the day, Dale Carnegie, the grandfather of speakers, said speakers who talk about what life has taught them never fail to keep the attention of their listeners. And I know that that's every one of you. I've got to come up with this one. Tell me, Mr. Anderson, what good is a phone call if you can't speak? Agent Smith from The Matrix, just in case you don't know. Now, lucky for you, I'm even going to tell you what the number one mistake is. Let me tell you the how. In the world, it's normally called the how hole. What we do, despite the fact that we love stories and that we'll often repeat stories and it'll be the thing we remember about someone, when it comes to us, the last thing we do is talk about our story. We jump to our expertise and start talking about that, because that really protects us. And that's something we can put out there, and then everybody will know we're clever. However, those lovely marketing people who tell us that we have to just, you know, find pain and deliver the solution and then do what we do in the background are also the same people who will say, you need to be authentic. That's the new secret sauce. And my question is, how is it that we can just talk about our expertise and our solution to the problems and do what we do in the background and still be authentic. And so might say that story is how we bring authenticity to our front door. So I think of it like this. Our expertise is a bit like being in a rowing boat. We're paddling along and we're getting across the lake and it's a beautiful day and we're all getting there. But story is like putting up a sail and suddenly you're moving as if by magic. And I know which one I'd rather be in a storm. So story is literally what made us humans, ultimately. The best evidence from archaeology and anthropology suggests that the human mind co-evolves with storytelling. I don't suppose I actually have to make that argument. Most of us are pretty much aware of that. And in the English-speaking world, we have one story structure that underpins everything, right back from the ancient Greek times, Aristotle and his Crisis, Struggle and Resolution Act. So it's called the three-act structure. And most of us know it as the beginning, the middle and the end. It is under everything, but we have a whole other story structure that came through from Joseph Campbell and was adopted by George Lucas, and hence why we have Star Wars, and everybody has a familiarity with this story structure called the hero's journey. You know it, it's the individualist narrative, it's the story of somebody gets the call, they go off into the unknown, fight some monsters, come back with learning. It's called the monomyth. I hustled my way into the grown-up world in the real world of movies. So I know the hero's journey like the back of my hand, but as is apparent, I'm also a woman. And therefore I also know that when Gandalf comes knocking at your door, sometimes you have to ask him to come back at 4 o'clock because you've got to pick the kids up from school, or you're picking up the pieces from somebody else who answered the call. So I know that the hero's journey is not enough. The hero's journey is not enough because it's the child archetype. It's the journey of the child to man. It's the story of Luke Skywalker. And the thing is, if you are in the process, if you are in the job of transforming people or creating change or getting people to see and feel differently in the world, you are Obi-Wan. And that is a completely different story. So as experts and as practitioners and as transformers and change makers, what we have to do is step out of the endless cycle of the hero where we're always learning something new. I know one of those, I don't know enough. And we have to awaken what I call the legend within, because Obi-Wan's journey is the legend's journey. Now, the great thing about that is there is a structure underneath that as well. But we build our message a lot more like a firework, which needs, you know, a fuse to be lit. And then it has to have some propellant so that it can get up high enough before it explodes that it can be seen across an entire city, or maybe even from space. So I'm here to give you the first couple of tips about this. In the movie world, we always had two tracks. There's what needs to be there, that's the structure. And then there's what makes it desirable, and that is story. And in your case, it's your story. So your expertise needs to be there. But to make it desirable, to make people want to lean in, to make people want to change, you use story. And of course, the one you know best is yours, which is what I call a legend story. It's the story of possibility. It helps people to understand it doesn't have to be this way. So the interesting thing about true stories is they have four natural powers. They can heal, they can inspire, they can lead, or they can even help us to see the future. And yours will be one of those. And when you know what your power is, it helps you to shape it in a way that helps you to work with your clients or give presentations, or even to stand under the spotlight because you have more information about what makes it work. So how do I know this? Funnily enough, I'm going to tell you a story. It's of a very ordinary woman. This is her outside her front door. Oh, okay, it's me. And yes, I have cut my hair since then, but not since lockdown. But this is me outside my front door with my two sons. Ben is on my right and he was 16 at the time, and Harry is on my left and he was 12. My marriage broke down, my father died, and I lost my second publishing deal all within 6 months. My entire landscape was torched, and I needed to walk out of there with a bigger story to tell. So that's exactly what we did. We went out for a walk. It just so happened that it was over the Pyrenees and across Spain for 800 kilometers and took 33 days. And you have to remember, my sons were 16 and 12 at the time. Now, within 3 weeks of coming back, I was invited to give a talk. It was in the Age Concern Cafe at the back of my town hall. But why was I asked to do it? Because I had stepped beyond the hero. I gave my sons the space to decide what kind of men they wanted to be. And funny enough, that went on to become a national inspirational speaking tour, a crowdfunded book, and an invitation to speak on the TED stage. And really what people want to know is, how can I do that for myself? You may not want all of those things, but what you want to know is how to harness all the stories and which ones to leave untold and which one will make the most effect. So these are usually what we suffer from. We have too many stories. We don't know which story works. We don't believe it's worth telling, or we don't believe we have a story. None of them are true. Not in my experience. So we're going to get a little bit of an experience of how to find that story. This is a participatory thing. Again, take a nice piece of paper and I want you to draw a straight line. I'm only going to give you a minute for this because it should be instinctual. What I want you to do is I want you to draw your life like the beats of a heart, draw the main events in your life. Don't stop, don't label them. Peaks and pits, be honest. Don't try to remember them all, just the ones that come naturally. I'm going to give you a minute and it should look something like this. Although I've seen them with flowers, with hearts, with all sorts of things. So let me do that now. Let's start that minute now. Perfect. Okay. And Josephine, I just saw that you drew a stuffed animal gremlin, orange with green eyes and a tongue sticking out. He sounds absolutely mischievous. I love him. So now that you've got your life up and downs like this, I'm hoping you've got a little bit of space to maybe stand up. All our work is autobiographical. That's why it needs to be embodied. And this is one of the ways in which we can start to feel our story. So what I want you to do is I want you to tear up your line into pieces with peaks and pits. And I want you to lay them out on the floor in chronological order. This is where I'm hoping you've got some space. And if you haven't, put it down on the desk in front of you. And you don't necessarily need to tear that up. But when you tear it up, it does give it a bit of space around each event. And then I'm going to ask you to spend 3 minutes with this. If you are standing up and you have some space, that's great. Place them on the floor in chronological order. Siwan, if you don't have any space, that's absolutely fine. And I don't have to see you. This is for you to feel. Or put it on the desk in front of you. And then what I want you to do is I want you to step from the very beginning of your story, the start of that timeline you drew. I want you to step onto the first point and feel it. Try and remain, don't let yourself go. Just let the memory flood back in. And remember how you felt about it, and then from today, stay in that space, but from today, look at what you learned from it. I'm going to go on silent to give you 3 minutes in silence, but I'll just repeat that. Stand on the event, feel it back then in the past, and then from today, think about what you learned from that very specific time. And I want you to walk up your timeline on each of those events that you drew and see what you got from it, starting now. Well done. Thank you for that. Topaz, there's a quick brief over thing. There you go. I'm so pleased to hear that, Lena. Thank you for saying that. I'm just going to whip through those slides again. So everybody who missed it, it just looked like something like this. Okay. So I'll just, Siwan, because you are brave enough to be on screen, I wonder if you would share what your experience was.
Do you want me to share what my lessons in life were?
That would be fantastic, yes.
Okay. I have a right to make my own decisions. I deserve to be respected. I have a right to my own boundaries. I don't have to believe other people's insults. I will never talk to myself nastily ever again. I have another chance at life. I can be loved. I need only those who respect me in my life.
Wow. That's incredibly powerful. Siwan, I salute you and your courage for saying that. Thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity. It was a great exercise. Really, really feels good.
And the interesting thing, of course, we only did it for 3 minutes. And so by the end of this, I'm going to set it as homework. Because one of the things that's really, really important about our life, or the story, is the learning that we take away. To make a great learning story, we have to have learned. And that's why I say all our work is autobiographical. So we all have experiences, and at the time, we will create a template out of that. That's what the mind does. It uses stories because they're very rich sources of all of the experience to make everything quicker. We can make decisions quicker. We can assess things easier. So we create little templates, but they stay like that. So what often happens is we don't take the learning away from it, or the better learning away from it. So, by doing this exercise, by reflecting back over all of those times, we get to see with our present day, our smarter mind, perhaps the learning in the situation back then. Now, if we're going to use this practically in our work, if you're working with people to create change, they are usually where you were, and what they want to be is where you are now. And so our story helps create an empathy bridge over which they can see their way to the other side. So that's the story. And that's the only story you really need to tell. The one that explains how you got from where you were to where you are today. Now, I was working with somebody the other day and their opening line was, "My life changed the day I asked a better question." So it can be as simple as that. Because we all look for answers, but if we're not asking a great question, we'll get not great answers. So it can be as simple as that, but it can be something very quiet, or it can be something big, but it is always in the meaning or the learning from our experience. So we're not telling the story of our experience per se. We are using that to give context to the learning. And that's how powerful a story can be. If you think about it, if you've gone to the movies and you've cried when somebody's died or been scared, you know that story is that powerful, because all it is flickering images in the mind and you're feeling real physiological responses to it. And so when you do use your story, you can see how powerful it is for others to see that transformation. So it's usually a bridge like this. It starts with something like when your life took an unexpected direction, In my case, remember, my father dies and my marriage breaks up and I lose a publishing deal. So that was all unexpected. I didn't expect to be a single parent. So if you look for those times in your life where it was like, how the hell do I get out of this? Or those ones that usually when my life changed when, or I had no options. I had no choice. I tried everything else. It can be quieter than that, but those ones are obvious ones. And then when you knew what you had learned from it is on the other side. That probably explains who you are today and what you do. So that's the, I got out of it. I didn't just survive, I thrived. Or I proved it. Or this worked where nothing else did. So many of us in health and well-being tend to be working with this. This worked when nothing else did. In the trauma pieces, most people use metaphor to help somebody to go on a journey without having to go through the traumas. We know this from marketing and advertising. Advertising's oldest game. It's the power of the before and after, really. I'm just giving you this idea. You know this one where somebody says you've got a terrible lawn, but do you know what? I've got a lawn fixer. Don't worry, it could look like this. It's such an embedded story device that we're very familiar with it. And that's actually its superpower, because we don't have to think about it. We understand it. And we understand it with beyond our neocortex and right back there in the emotional brain that has no language. So we feel safe when somebody tells a story like this. So if you are shy, it might be your superpower, because there are hundreds of shy people, thousands of shy people around the world. And if you say, I am shy, but actually there was this time when I did this, and that if you can then explain how you got on with it, it'd be great. If you stand in the spotlight and you are shy, the spotlight will just transmit that, and everybody has great empathy and compassion for shyness. And so there's no need to hide it. We can then see the bravery. So that's the superpower in something like that. The learning can't come from unconnected events, just so you know. For example, and these are two obvious extremes, think about a person who loses their child but later wins the lottery. So these two things are not connected. So the one you're telling is connected. It's the experience as context for what you learned from it. And so, who's up for the number one secret? Yes, I'll bet you are. It starts with you. This is who you need to be in the spotlight. It doesn't matter anything else. It's a skill. It's storytelling. It's learning which story to tell, which part of you is now actually a legend. Because if you're shy or you've had something terrible happen to you, but you have survived, if you're ever one of those people that says, happened for a reason, everything happened for a reason, everything doesn't happen for a reason necessarily. The people who say that are the ones who saw the reason. If you're one of those, then you have learning, then you have a gift that you can give the world. And we have to just remember, there are two tracks. There's what needs to be there, that's the structure, and then it's what makes it desirable. I don't have time to teach the structure on this, but I'm very happy to put a download link, make it in Facebook or at the bottom of this, whatever the lovely organizers will let me do. But if you want it, you're welcome to it. But what I want you to do for 1 minute is think of one part of your life where your work sprung from. And then that's the story you need to tell. Whatever it is you're doing in the world, the way you can get people to understand it, want your help with it, come to you for your expertise, is if you can tell a story about where it came from, context and meaning. I'm going to give you that minute just to think of it, because it'll be necessary for your homework. Starting now. Perfect. Now, I'm going to tell you one little story. One last one. I used to have a story that I was a tiny little potato at the bottom of a sack at the back of the cellar, just reaching for the light to be seen. And then one day on this tour that I was giving in the UK, I ended up in this village hall. It's a very tiny little village hall at the bottom of a road in the middle of nowhere, but it was full. It was built by the grandfather of the woman who was organized the event. It was a fantastic afternoon. The atmosphere was incredible. And as I left, there was a woman waiting outside on a wheelchair. And she asked if she could talk to me. So we wheeled our way around to the car park because I had to get home. And she said to me, "I want what you've got." And the funny thing is, I knew it wasn't legs because she wasn't bothered by that. And she didn't want to do the walk I'd done. So I had to really lean in and get curious and ask her her story. And she told me she loved poetry. She would go out into the fields and she would speak her poetry out loud. And she had built her own kitchen from her wheelchair. And when I listened to that, I finally understood. What had happened is that this complete stranger had come from absolutely out of the blue to her village, and the whole village had turned out to hear her story. And she wanted to know, why was she invisible? Why did nobody in her own village know hers? And that's when I realized all we want is to matter. And all our stories matter. We just have to make them matter. And with that, it will take you from the stage to the podium to the signing table, powered on story, or it'll help transform your clients, or it will help you to see your own story in a new way. And that is the most powerful transformation of all. Because now all little potatoes can have wings. So we have to awaken the legend within. Now I've left some time for questions. So please do. Your homework after this is to go back to that timeline and really feel in, give yourself some time to do it because it is one of the most powerful processes. Really feel into those moments and ask, what did you learn? And another way of doing it is to walk up the timeline and then turn around and look back down it and see what the one takeaway is. So for me, I walked up it and I had this story of my life was a struggle. When I turned around and looked back down it, what I saw was growth. And I always loved that. So this is your homework, but now it is time for questions and answers. So Josephine, how do we awaken the legend within? It is being covered now, yet could be repeated. How do you get in touch with your story of possibility? Your story of possibility is to look for the signals in your life where you have been right, and then to see, to flip the timeline over and see if there's something you can see in the pattern coming up that allows you to see what the future could be. And then the other thing is, obviously, is to find one of those strongest points, and it's usually a pit. Find one of the strongest points where you felt that everything was against you and step into it. And then in the present, look back and see what you learned from it. And that's usually one of the peaks when you actually noticed that you finally knew what it is that you know today. And if you're still in that too many stories space, that's okay. It often happens, particularly with women, because we change identities so much. And identity stories are held at the highest hierarchy. And so if we've had to change our identity many times, the mind holds lots of stories at the same importance. And all it is about joining from somewhere where you've been to somewhere where you learned. And the most important thing actually is for us to see ourselves in some heroic way. If I just talk about the fact that for one minute, I was the pitiful single parent. When I look back, I lived that story. It was everybody else's story about me. And I felt it must be true. Until one day I realized that I was paying the bills. I was making it happen. I was still doing a good job. And I was still managing to live my life. In fact, it was pretty heroic. That doesn't mean to say I was, but I was able to flip the story that the world was trying to tell me my story was and take my own back. One of the most radical things you can do is take back your true story from a world that has handed you their story of what they think is possible for you and what they think you are worth. So, Nicoline, you work a lot with embodiment, but as soon as I approach a spotlight, my perfectionist goes nuts and the whole thing crumbles. How do I practice stepping into embodiment in the spotlight? I'd love to know whether being in the spotlight, you are usually presenting your expertise, or whether you are, in what context you are stepping into the spotlight. Might be able to hear that. I'm going to give you a chance to type that in, Nicoline. I'm just going to answer somebody else's. So Siam, what would you do if your story was extremely personal? All our stories inform us to who we are, but we don't need to tell all our stories. If we look for what we learned from our personal story, that's what we focus on. The personal bit, imagine mine is, my father dies, my marriage breaks up, and I lose my publishing deal. That actually took nearly 2 years, maybe even longer. But I don't actually go into the details of it. What I want everyone to know is that I went on a walk and that I ended up with a bigger story to tell, and my life unfolded in a completely different way. When I focus on that part of my story, the extremely personal piece, I can just sum up in one sentence. So sometimes these are our very important pieces, but when we focus on what we learned from it or the journey that it took us on, that's usually where the learning is for someone else. So we do need to go into the extremely personal story. And if it's useful, if it's going to help somebody else to see the worth in themselves, it's worth finding a way to tell it. But there's as much power in the untold story as there is in the stories that we do tell. So all our stories have value, even the ones that we don't tell. It's always in the learning. Josephine has asked, when I thought of what I learned, what came was how to grow plants and be a good friend. Should I dig further for lessons and legend material? Usually what you want is, you're talking about what you learned from it, the plant piece and the good friend. Now, what is the important, the question then is, what is the importance of plants and good friends? So we always have the first takeaway, and then we can apply what's called the five whys. I'll let you Google that one, but essentially we ask why, what then, five times. And that usually ends up giving us our distinct idea that's worth sharing with the world or some major insight into ourselves. So, it would be like, what do you do with plants? And what does being a good friend really mean? And what worth does it have in the world? And if it doesn't answer anything else, but you've learned that you are a good friend, what does that say about being a friend? How much value does it have in your life? Is it what you want, something you value? Did it change what you believe about yourself? And is there something you want more? Do you want a good friend in return? So it can be just a starting point. I'm just going to answer Nicolai's question with something I'm going to make up, I think. What I'm going to presume, Nicolai, is when it's really difficult, when it's about personal stuff, I've become quite good at staying with embodiment, perfect. The expertise is always about, much more important, not yours, theirs. If you can give people an experience in the room, then they will know your expertise for themselves, and the trust, like, and know will be there, and your credibility will be there because they'll experience it. So the best thing with expertise is to think of a way in which you can give whoever is in the room or online an experience, and then the expertise will already be done. And then another way is to find a metaphor. Metaphors are a wonderful way of conveying complex ideas. They drop right through that neocortex and into the heart. So if you remember my rowboat and my sail, something like that, those would be my big tips, and I hope that they help. Now, I believe my time is up, and so I am going to ask my host, Oksana, if there's anything I need to do right now.
Thank you so much, Melanie. You made it so perfect and so structured that I could totally relax and just enjoy and think on my own questions. And it was amazing. I was just thinking, if we maybe have 1 minute, so that if somebody from the attendees who is not in the panelist group want to share still their timelines that they were working with, if they want to show it or if they want to comment on that, would you like to have this kind of response?
Perfect. I'm maybe absolutely so, here for a minute. Yeah. I'm here for you.
Great. So, great. So if someone still wants that, maybe you could write the comment in the chat. I guess that would be a bit faster for our tech host.
And, thank you, Danielle.
Or, yeah, you could write your takeaway. Yeah. Okay. We get a thank in the question and answer box from Nicolene. Amazing. Okay, great.
And don't forget, I have the framework link if anybody would like that.
Yeah, could you share please that link with our tech host, or is it already?
Yep, we can do that.
Yeah, people are asking for the link. So do we have
it? There you go. We've shared it with the tech host. Thank you so much, Patricia. Amazing.
Yeah, Patricia, could you also please share maybe the link for the personal website of Melanie? And any contact form if people would have more questions or would like to ask for more guidance. Okay, Lena just got the question. When fear comes up halfway from camera or stage, what to do?
I love that one, Lena. And again, it's just, it's a really simple answer. It's to remember that everybody in the audience is human too. And the fear is just something trying to protect you, and it doesn't know why. And for a pause, a damn good pause, nearly always allows you to center back in here. The fear is nearly always in the head. Even if it's at the back of your head, that tingle, it's a head response. So if you breathe and bring yourself back into your body knows. And that's why, really, this was such a perfect thing for the Embodiment Conference.